You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 6th, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we celebrate our wins wherever we find them, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, everybody.
How's
Thank you so much this week for all the cards and emails and election-related stuff that you sent. We appreciate the marshmallow catapults that someone sent us.
Were they trebuchets or catapults? I'm not really sure of the distinction between the two.
It's hard to say, but the fact that they included two little balls with the word with the letter F on them for F-bombs was very much appreciated. And we are recording this on Friday. And tonight, President-elect Joe Biden, I'm going to say it.
Now you're going to jinx it. I got to go outside and go around and spit things. Turn around and spit. Oh, damn it, damn it, damn it.
I am not that PTSD about this anymore.
No.
Tonight he will be addressing the nation. So we are just grateful today. There's a lot of gratitude out there. Although we still have a Republican congressman. SB wrote us this morning, and his or her email reflected what many have said to us this week. SB writes, "Good Friday morning. I just wanted to thank you for your podcast. You have kept me well-informed and educated through this nightmare of an administration, and for that I am eternally grateful. I have been crying sporadically since Pennsylvania was flipped this morning.
Yeah.
The weight has been lifted from my heart. I suddenly realized that I will have to go through the entire day being this emotional. And I started to get overwhelmed. Then I remembered, chop wood, carry water. Thank you."
That's right.
SB. And I can't tell you how many people tweeted and emailed me this week.
Yeah.
With before elections, chop wood, carry water. After elections, chop wood, carry water. Because that is our...
That's one of our many mottos. Let's be fair.
One of our many mottos. Along with burn the lifeboats and a bunch of other things.
Yeah. No fair remembering stuff.
Yes, there's all kinds of things that we've said repeatedly, but...
Which will come out on t-shirts and merch in the near future. It's my understanding.
Yeah, I think chop wood, carry water might be a good one.
Yeah.
We appreciate you, and you carry us through as well. So we definitely feel that, and we appreciate it. I have 50 postcards to voters ready to go for the Georgia runoffs. They have stamps on them. They are signed. They are ready to fill out when I'm given the directive of what to say on them. And I keep checking to see when those will be coming. I'm sure I'll get an email as well. But I'm ready. I'm ready to go back to work.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, Driftglass, if you'll indulge me.
Oh, I suppose I can. Even though last week was the letter program, and here you are reading letters. I think it's in violation of our implicit contract.
Well, I said we would keep reading letters, and we will.
Oh, yes, I know.
I had a couple of breakthroughs this week that are related to politics, but they came from the knitting world.
Oh, okay.
And to me, it was a terrific lesson. I was watching a knitting podcast on YouTube, and this knitter was working on the back of a sweater, and the back of the sweater was plain knitting, which is really boring. It's hard sometimes to work on something when it's just knit one row, purl one row, and that's all it is, and it's endless, and it feels like you'll never get done. And this podcaster said, sometimes you just have to put in the hours.
Yeah.
And that was such a new idea for me, because I have always focused on count not the hours, but knit for pleasure. Enjoy yourself. This knitting is your relaxing time. Knitting is the time that you express your creativity, etc. But sometimes you just need to put in the hours. And that, to me, has been connected so much to the Joe Biden campaign, and particularly what's been going on in Georgia.
Yeah.
And Stacey Abrams, and what she has had to do to simply put in the hours, even when personally it hurt her that she, you know, lost a race, that she
cheated.
Lost.
She was cheated.
And was cheated. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what did she do? She turned around and put in the hours.
Yeah.
And some of that work, you know, chop wood, carry water. Some of that work is not glamorous. Some of that work is not fun.
No.
And it's sometimes it's even boring, but you got to just put in the hours. And that's what all of us need to do. We need to strap on and get ready to put in the hours to flip the Senate in 2022. Flip it sooner if we can, and definitely flip it in 2022.
Well, and we do say, just as an aside, among ourselves, and laugh, because, you know, nobody does this, that no matter what you do, you have to put in your 10,000 hours.
Right.
So our advice to people who are starting up a blog is
or
always
a podcast.
The podcast advice is first do 10,000 hours of blogging. Then,
or whatever it is you're going to podcast about. If you're doing craft brewing, you know, if you're making beer in your backyard, do that for as, you know, months or years before and make sure you're podcasting about a passion.
Right.
Because you will run out of steam if you don't.
Yes, you will. There are going to be a whole lot of podcasts. My prediction is that are going to dry up or reduce radically.
Yep.
Now that there's a White House they can go work for.
Right. Or a White House that they don't have to think about every day.
Right. Right.
And the thing is, we are still the cornfield resistance because we still have a Republican congressman.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and we put
we
down
still
our
have
roots.
A media we have to deal with. Yeah.
We put down our roots during the Obama administration.
Right.
And we put down our blogging roots during the Bush administration. This is this is the week, by the way, of Blue Gal's 16th blogiversary. 16 years.
16 years of blogging.
So we've been there and back, and we have the t-shirts, and we've sold the t-shirts.
Fortunately, no one has asked us, what are you going to podcast about now? because let's face it, Martha McCallum is calling someone that uses the term big boy pants. Is saying, you know, I don't think elected officials should talk that way.
I think you need to tell people who that is.
Martha McCallum is a Fox News hostess. And she's berating the mayor of Philadelphia for telling Donald Trump to put on his big boy pants and accept the results of this election.
Yeah,
and she put her panties in a twist.
Yeah, that's
and
not
said,
becoming.
I don't think elected officials should talk that way.
Yeah.
You know, irony is dead.
Yeah. Dead.
Not
all
noticing
dead.
The way the elected official at the head of the government, quote unquote, has been talking for 4 years. I also, again, in the knitting world, started a baby blanket for the new baby that's coming to our family next year.
Yes.
And in the pattern for this particular baby blanket, it says, we don't do perfectionism on this blanket. If you do a stitch wrong, keep going.
No!
And yes, right. You know, and I've always been of the mindset of the difference between good knitters and great knitters. Great knitters rip out their mistakes and go back and do them and make it, everything perfect.
She packs her Hummels up very carefully, one at a time, with a handkerchief. That's a very inside Fargo joke.
We'll
just leave that right there. But no, not that. But when it comes to the things you're passionate and perfectionist about,
right?
You know, I when I blog, I'm just going to talk about me because this is all about me, just for a second. I have typos in my stuff. I have transposed words. I have sentence fragments because I'm moving stuff around. Constantly, here's a phrase I need, and here's a paragraph I want to use, and I sort of shift them around and move. I give them two reads through, and I always miss something, almost always miss something. That's because it's not going to the Paris Review for publication. It's because I have to get it out the door fast, and it's good enough for today. But I am fastidious when it comes to editing my publishing work or editing other people's works to that degree. And perfectionism can stand in your way. So, you know,
that's what I want to say about where the Democratic Party is right now, because we're learning a lot of lessons about Trumpism. So I don't use that word. I use that word ironically in that sentence.
Yes.
But we are learning a lot about the Trump voter and about Republicans and their party identity and why they vote the way they do, and reassessing how we run for office and how we do things. We've faced a couple of really big losses in Illinois.
Yes.
In our particular district. One is the congressional race, which, again, we're going to talk about, and the fair tax also. So we will talk about both of those. Having those big losses has taught us some lessons, and not gaining another 20 seats in the House, that teaches us a lesson. So let's dig into it.
Well, and,
right?
And when it comes to normalcy, when it comes to putting in the hours, you know, what smart people call quantity time. You also have to make an effort to keep things normal. I mean, you know, you cast on a new project this week.
Right.
Because there is going to be a future and we're going to live in it. So let's just keep going. Let's just keep moving. Also because you gave a blanket away to our next door neighbor, which is, you know.
I just ran over to my knitting drawer and found the baby blanket I'd finished and gave it to the baby that was visiting next door, because that's what you do.
That's what you do.
And that's why you have baby blankets in reserve, because, oh, there's a baby that might need a blanket. Yes. So
there's a new baby who has a little dog that guards her, and a happy grandpa who has
happy
a new
grandpa.
Blanket.
The grandpa lives next door to us. Yeah. That's the and is this new baby in the jumpy seat visiting, and it's a beautiful day yesterday, and, you know.
Well, and we also celebrated Halloween here like we usually do. It was the same bell curve of a few people, parents with very small children early, and then a bunch of kids, older kids later with their parents or not, and then a few trailing off. The net numbers were down.
Yeah.
But it was the same flow. And I thoroughly enjoyed sitting out there with a table with things spread, you know, 6 inches to a foot apart, candy out there.
Right. We had that's the way the city told us to do it, which is have a table at the end of your driveway with the candy on it, and you sit behind it and stay 6 feet away.
And I stayed 10 feet away because I've got long reach. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and they thoroughly enjoyed it. And we had, you know, 12 Spider-Men and 3 Hulks, and it was, but it was
a few princesses too. Don't forget
several and a couple of, you know, older kids who were. Yeah. Who are telling their younger brothers, just take one. You can only take one. Because I put a little sign up saying, just take one. But it was making a deliberate effort to be normal.
Yeah.
Halloween is one of the glorious things of where we live. When I lived in Chicago, in my condo, there were 2 people every Halloween. And they were my neighbor's kids. And they were wonderful. But that was it. That is not how Halloween should be in my imagination. It should be a wonderful Ray Bradbury type of year with brown leaves and ghosts around the corner and just floods of kids in cool little masks coming up to your door.
And the weather was wonderful this year.
It was.
And also, you know, it snowed last year for Halloween. So this was great. And we usually have 75 or 80 kids at our house.
It's,
so that
it is
a thing. Yeah.
But you gotta really kind of do it intentionally. We're going to have Halloween this year. I looked up and down the block and there were like 10 other neighbors who were doing the same thing.
Yeah,
either on their porch or on their steps or whatever. I'm like, yeah, exactly. And it was a beautiful full moon.
It was a night. The weather was really good. So that helped a lot.
We have to do this. We have to make the effort to be normal people and enjoy the normal pleasures of life in the normal seasonal rotation.
In the middle of a pandemic Donald Trump is still president.
Right. Yes. But not stupidly. We can't do it stupidly. Right. But we have to do it and put in the hours and the intentionality.
That's why perfectionism, you know, you don't do the full light up the house with Halloween stuff. And you don't knock yourself out, killing yourself to do it. But you do it imperfectly as you can. And and that is how we are. That is how life is. Life is imperfect. And expect that. And we've got to not beat ourselves up over it. Let's learn from it and move on to the next one.
Well, and speaking of normal and boring and intentional, Joe Biden is leading in Pennsylvania.
And, you know, I'm so grateful. My dad called me the other day and reminded me, although I didn't need reminding, that it's the anniversary of my mother's passing. She passed away 4 years ago this week and never knew that Donald Trump had been elected president. And I was so grateful that she passed, if she had to pass, that she passed when she did. And the fact that, you know, it's Arizona for John McCain and Georgia for Representative Lewis and Pennsylvania for my mom.
For your mom.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for my mom is great. So, yeah. So a small but sturdy and growing lead in Pennsylvania, right? Yeah.
It appears like 71 million Democrats are about to successfully depose a deranged tyrant without a shot being fired.
Yeah. And it's a shame that it's not more. It's a shame that it's not a washout, but it is a 3 to 4 million vote difference. Mm-hmm. And that is something to be grateful for.
Yeah, that is not a small thing. It is to cast out a deranged madman who has an army of loyal idiots who are willing to die for him to salvage democracy, to make it make it possible to salvage democracy. We're still in trouble.
Yeah.
But this is like, we patched the hole. You know, there's a bunch of other things wrong with the ship of state, but the big gaping hole below the waterline is now sort of patched up and we can begin pumping water out without any help from, you know, the other idiots. But that is not a small thing. That is a thing that is worth celebrating and meditating on and thinking about the consequences of it. And that's really what we're going to do today, I think, which is you got to understand the country you live in. I have hoped against hope because I'm a bit of a cynical person that at each election cycle, when it becomes blindingly obvious that the Republican Party is a white nationalist fascist party, pure and simple, right down to the roots, that more people with larger public platforms and larger network platforms would get the fucking message that this is a Cold War and they're bad people and they're not going away. And this election should be just the biggest MRI imaginable. Mm-hmm. There are bad people in this country who came out in record numbers to vote for a terrible human being after watching him for 4 years and saying, that's the guy I want. But elections and viruses have this in common. They don't care how you feel about your delusions or what you wrap yourself in or how many flags you wave. They will, you know, reality will come a calling whether you like it or not. Donald Trump can lie his ass off about a Russiagate and have his idiots believe it. And he can lie his ass off about crowd size and the 25,000 other lies he's told, because that's all he does is lie. But when it comes to a pandemic and when it comes to elections, that's when reality kicks the door in and says, no, this is how things are working now. Viruses don't care about your elections, don't care about your politics. They're just going to come for you if you're stupid and reckless. And elections are a matter of math, adding votes until you figure out who won.
Particularly in a pandemic, when so many votes are paper ballots that you cannot manipulate.
That's right.
The war for paper ballots has been won in this cycle.
Yes, it has. It sure has.
And I'm grateful for that. I don't miss out on that one. Don't miss that lesson. The paper ballots makes a huge difference because there is a postmark on them and there is a mark on them. Mm-hmm. And the idea that Usay and Uday, or whatever we call the Trump boys, Kusay,
Uday and Kusay, Hussein kids,
want to make this about Sharpie pens.
Right.
Those paper ballots, you can't deny that they're right there. They have a postmark and a mark on them, and they're real.
Yes.
And we need to continue that practice of paper ballots.
Yes, we do.
Georgia has that challenge because of the election machines in Georgia. Donald Trump hat salesman is where I want to go next.
Yes.
A good part of the rage that he's expressing, which is an effort to destroy democracy on one level, on another level, it's a marketing ploy.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has, once he accepts the loss, two things he's going to focus on. One is avoiding criminal prosecution, and the other is how to make a buck off of this. And the way you make a buck off of this is to keep your followers feeling a sense of grievance that they've been cheated.
Right.
And keep selling those t-shirts and flags and hats. And I foresee that he's going to try some sort of political action committee that is not related to reelecting him yet, because he's got to be able to spend that money as a personal piggy bank rather than be required to use it for election purposes. Mm-hmm. And so watch for that. We wanted to talk about how this year and the 2016 election are kind of mirror opposites. Do you want to start talking about that?
I've been trying to put this into words in my own head for a while, and I came up with a graphic that is 2016 and 2020 as mirror opposite images of each other. But the way I explained it to myself is this. Things happened the way they did in 2016 for lots of reasons. But one big reason why it ended badly, in addition to Russia, in addition to James Comey and all the rest, was that all the clever people who control the microphones and megaphones in our culture were so fucking sure that Hillary Clinton was a lock, was a mortal lock, they felt free to just go to town on her, beat her like a pinata, use her to advance their career. Because that was going to be their on their resume when Hillary Clinton was sworn in. I was tough on her. I was I was tougher on her than that crazy Trump fella. You know, we knew she was going to win, so we had to look into those emails, man. That was our job, and we did our job well. And that liberated, in the minds of a lot of stupid people, a freedom to take reckless chances with their voting and reckless chances with their support. Hey, why not throw your vote away? Why not vote for Jill Stein? Why not write in Mickey Mouse? Who the fuck cares? Mm-hmm. Because Hillary's going to win anyway. So no matter how big a mess we make of our electoral, no matter how loudly Matthew Dowd stands on his desk and screams about disrupting the system, which is what the chief political analyst of ABC did for a goddamn year, it won't matter. Because at the end of the day, Hillary will come in just like Barack Obama, and she will clean up our mess. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about being assholes, because Hillary will fix it no matter what we break. So just go ahead and tear the place up. And that cost us the election. Mm-hmm. And then everybody looked at each other and wanted to know whose fault this was. Well, you know, after all, it was you and me, to quote the Rolling Stones, except it wasn't you and me. It was Matthew Dowd and Ron Fournier and a whole bunch of other people, including
Morning Joe.
The whole sandwich, the whole media failed. The whole mass media failed us. And it gave people the sense that it didn't matter what they did with their vote, because Hillary was going to fix – the fix was in. She was going to win. Don't worry about it. 2020, all the same clever people were sure there was going to be a blue tsunami. Absolutely positive.
Just as there was in 2018.
Right. Going to blow it
40
out.
40 seats in the House. Right.
We're going to flip everything. The Senate is going to be, 80-20 Democrat. We're going to win every seat down to a water reclamation district. It's going to be amazing. And people were putting up, all of their prediction charts that showed 400 electoral votes for Joe Biden.
And yet the Democratic Party was so PTSD'd from 2016 that we all turned out.
We're not.
And no one voted for Trump as a joke.
No.
So there's that. The people that voted for Trump really want Trump.
Right. And that blue tsunami liberated them to go out and vote for him. I don't have to quit the party. I don't have to second guess anything. I want to stand with my team against this horrible, wave of socialist commie monsters.
Right.
And their dictator.
And the Biden crime family. Yeah.
The Biden crime family. And so they felt absolutely free to come out of their hidey holes in great big numbers, in 7 million more numbers than last election, and stand behind, after having watched Trump and the Republican Party just fuck up everything, lie constantly, kill their friends and neighbors, just shit on the economy, tear up every agreement we have all around, just be the worst possible president you could have fucking imagined.
Except, Driftglass, I don't think that they're even close to being aware of that.
They're not. That's the point.
The point is, Donald Trump is the mean, drunk daddy of the family.
Right.
And you keep telling yourself, no, daddy really loves me, and daddy's is doing the best he can.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard that from voters. Oh, on this virus, he's doing the best he can. Now, they're not going to give that much leeway at all to Joe Biden.
No.
It's all Joe Biden's fault from here on in, everything that happens. There is just a level of family dynamic to this, that I'm a Republican. That's my last name.
Right.
I'm Joe Republican. Daddy is doing the best he can. And it's the authoritarian streak. It's the denialism. And it's, frankly, the media bubble they live in. I was shocked to know how few Republicans have even heard of Stormy Daniels.
Oh, yeah. No.
They don't know. They don't know that he paid a bribe, an actual bribe during an election to a porn star. They don't know that. They are in a bubble. They watch Tucker Carlson for news.
Right.
So they really do think that Donald Trump is doing a great job as president.
That is
where they are.
She's a little rough around the edges, and they wish he wouldn't tweet so much, of course. But he's the kind of rough and tumble, hard-nosed, successful businessman and celebrity this country needs to put it right back on the right course.
Because he's not a politician. Right.
He's not a politician. And it is beyond my ability to control how stupid our elite thinkers are that these people are even aware that anyone's having a conversation about Donald Trump's lying. They're not. If I can just drill for 1 second into our locals, because those people I do know.
I was going to say, I really want to switch over to talk about Rodney Davis, our congressman, who's going to be our congressman for another 2 years.
Well,
and his ads where he talked about politicians in Washington.
Right.
He's been in Congress for multiple terms.
Yes, he has.
And his ads talked about, you know, politicians in Washington don't understand this district.
Well,
who are you, Rodney Davis?
and so let's just jump ahead and talk about Rodney Davis and our local crazies.
Mm-hmm.
Rodney Davis, as you probably know, if you listen to this podcast, our candidate. And by the way, first things first, thanks to all of our listeners who supported her campaign. And we're looking at people who supported her morally with her votes and with your dollars. And I'm looking at you, Walt. I'm not going to say any more than that, but bless your heart for all you do. Supported the hell out of her, really gave her, you know, all the support you could ever ask for. And she lost to Rodney Davis for the second time in a row, this time by a much larger margin.
Yeah.
In 2018, Rodney Davis won 50.4% of the vote, and she won the balance, the remainder of that. So it was like 136,000 votes to 134,000 votes. Very close race. Mm-hmm. So Betsy actually increased her vote total by nearly 12,000 votes this year, which would have been enough to beat Rodney Davis in 2018.
Right.
But this ain't 2018 anymore. No. And you and I were talking to her and some of her people at a thing called Bites on the Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Back when we had food trucks and outdoor eating and things like that. And,
parties, like I said,
everyone, you know, politics here is very eye level. You run into the mayor, you run into our Senator Durbin.
You run into the governor around. Sometimes, too.
Every now and then, the governor's just toddling around doing his thing. So, and they chat. And we were very encouraged because it really was just a few more votes per precinct.
Right. She that said, was, like, 4 votes per precinct is all we need
that's the difference.
Flip this. Right.
But in 2020, in this election, Rodney Davis increased his vote total by nearly 40,000 votes.
Mm-hmm. And part of that is midterm versus general election.
Sure.
And that's going – there's going to be a lot more interest and a lot more news about it.
And 2018 was the women, the blue wave. It was, you know, there was a concerted effort to take something back from the crazies.
Right.
To really, we have to win this because Senate's out of reach. White House is out of reach. We got to take the House back. And that's where a lot of the energy and money went. And it was successful. And she came within, you know, a hair's breadth of winning. And this year she just got blown out. And so
let's talk about that and the fair tax and why that happened.
Yeah.
Because all politics is local.
It is. And we have got a guy in Illinois named Mike Madigan who runs the Illinois Congress. Mike Madigan has been in
the State House, right?
The State House, right. Mike Madigan is a corrupt, ancient, old-school politician. Everyone knows he's corrupt. Everyone knows he sucks. He is our Mitch McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Democrat. He's a Democrat,
but he's very powerful.
He's a Democrat. He's been in office since, I believe, Lincoln was splitting logs along the Sangamon River and making rafts.
Yeah. There is no one with the memory of when he first went into office. No.
And he is forever. You know, has had investigations, members of his staff have been, you know, up on charges. He's rotten. He's rotten, but governor hedge fund is worse.
Yes,
that was the choice we had. It was like, okay, this corrupt asshole and the Illinois Democrats control the state assembly versus a lunatic who wants to smash unions and cut taxes for billionaires and
is willing to go without a budget and hurt disabled children in order to achieve his political ends.
That was
our Republican governor.
The ultimate pragmatism of politics. Not the, you know what, I'm going to withhold my vote.
Speaking of not being a perfectionist, folks.
You know, it's if you think it's a matter of withholding your vote until you get a perfect candidate, this is a great example of, we know that he's fucking awful. The alternative is worse and more directly of a threat to us. And so we will live with the shitty choice. Mm-hmm. But really, he's got to go because Betsy Dirksen's ads were all about healthcare, 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 healthcare. Rodney Davis was, Betsy Dirksen is a Madigan stooge.
Right.
And that was it. That was all he ran on. Madigan, Madigan,
and just
Madigan.
Because she got money from the Illinois State Democratic Party, that tied her to Madigan like a rock.
Now.
And if I may talk about the fare tax for a minute, because it's the same thing.
Right.
We had a ballot initiative called the fare tax. Illinois has a flat tax for income tax.
Same rate for everybody.
Same rate for everybody, no matter whether you're J.B. Pritzker, multi-billionaire, or blue gallon drift glass, barely squeaking by. Okay? Mm-hmm. We pay 5% income tax. Both of us pay the same rate.
Right.
And this was to change that. And it requires a ballot initiative, and it requires that being a constitutional amendment to change that and make it so that
the tax rule is written into the Illinois Constitution.
Right. As it is in the Alabama Constitution as well. And I've been through this in Alabama multiple times. And so the ads for the fare tax were in favor of the fare tax were, look, most people are going to get a tax cut out of this. Billionaires will pay their fair share. That's a great thing. Go for it. And it will help to fix Illinois' economic hole that we're in. Mm-hmm. The anti-ads that were funded by billionaires, make sure you know that, of course, was you can't trust the Democrats in the state legislature to stop at just taxing billionaires. Your taxes will go up. This bill gives them unlimited power in Springfield, you know, the state capital, which is, you know, the source of all the corruption. This is Madigan again.
Right.
You can't trust the Democrats at the state house to stop with just taxing billionaires. They will tax you too, because that's all they want to do. They just want to get your money and tax you and waste it.
Right. It's all they want.
And that's all they want to do. And it failed. And we are going to have some really painful cuts statewide.
Yes, we are.
In Illinois, because this didn't pass. And it is Mike Madigan's fault. It is a lack of trust in the institution of the state house in Illinois, personified by Mike Madigan.
Now, I do want to emphasize that other candidates did win in Illinois.
Yes, they did.
So there is a way to overcome this, but I think she's just the wrong candidate for right now. Mm-hmm. She was just the wrong candidate. I mean, losing twice in a row to the same guy should tell you something about how you are running your race. There is an inherent flaw there that I don't know if she can overcome, which is a shame. I like her. I think she would make a great congressman.
She'd make a wonderful congresswoman.
I think she'd
she would
go in there and fight for our kids and fight for healthcare and all the good things.
She's very detail-oriented, and she'd be really good.
And I know her mom, and her mom is wonderful. And if her mom ran, I'd vote for her, too.
The right place, and she's very smart. Yep.
But – This is
the fault of the electorate of this district.
Yes.
That she is not the right candidate.
And I don't really know how to win in this district. I think the thing you do is you come after the Republican Party with a sword in both hands. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about my friends across the aisle. You don't talk in hushed tones about what you're going to do in policy. You do that a little bit, but you say the Republican Party is run by demons, run by madmen who've killed thousands and thousands of people in Illinois. And Rodney Davis is cool with that. And when he tells you he's voting for your healthcare system, or your healthcare to save your healthcare.
He wants to cross the aisle, and he's bipartisan.
He's lying.
And he wants to go against the politicians in Washington when he was the whip for Paul Ryan.
We're trying to gut the ACA.
Right.
Now, I also want to elide just a moment into our local, the general insanity, the bubble they live in, the fact they are completely unreachable. This is why the Lincoln Project failed, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. Our local wingnuts here are deep in the crazy.
Yeah.
And there's this perfect little encapsulation in local Facebook, which I didn't participate in, but I watched carefully. It was the former editor of our local Republican rag who bragged that she's an independent. I vote both sides. I voted for both candidates of both parties. I think of myself as an independent. Now, really, she's kind of a Democrat. She's kind of a liberal. Mm-hmm. But
she markets herself that way so that people will listen to her.
And the problem is that she marketed the paper that way. Yeah. It was important to have balance. That's why we need Ann Coulter on the op-ed page.
Right.
Why? Well, because, you know, we have this other guy who's a liberal. We got to have both sides. And she was really – I mean, you could tell that she is like the lowest employee at – MSNBC, who you can tell is like walking around with a bomb strapped to their chest that if they say Republicans are worse, we will detonate it. So she was, even as the Republican Party at Donald Trump was going off the fucking deep end, she was defending this rigorous, diligent, down the middle, never take sides, don't use the word liar, even as her own publisher was backing Republican events and talking in glowing terms about Republican actions, Republican attitudes. It was just this. It was this creepy. I'm a liberal on a paper in a Republican state, in a Republican area, and I can't afford to step out of line one fucking inch. Mm-hmm. So that's who ran this paper. And to her credit, she quit the paper on the hopes that they would use her salary to save her staff. So big respect for her for doing that. But she was having a virtual screaming match on Facebook with her aunt. and her aunt, who is full bull goose loony Republican Trump acolyte, right. And it was like someone watching, like watching someone trying to flick weak tea at a forest fire, mm-hmm. or a dumpster fire, because she kept saying, "But with respect, Auntie, here's what you have to understand: no Democrats are stealing it. You know it. You know Democrats are corrupt stealing. You're a monster." And I'd appreciate it if we didn't take a personal tone here. And she kept trying to be this nice Midwestern lady who just wants the facts on the table. Because all she was doing was public reprinting an article of how votes get counted.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the illegal votes, there are no illegal votes. Yes, there are. And you know it. And she just lit into – she was thrashing at everybody. And throughout this entire exchange, there was on the one side a flagrantly lunatic Republican – bitch.
And I'm going to say it, racist.
Racist, yes.
Who white was, supremacist.
Right. Who was absolutely off of her fucking rocker and 100% sure. She used the Trump. Everyone knows. Everyone knows Democrats cheated. Yeah, right. Everyone knows they stole the election.
Many people have told
Everyone
me.
Knows yeah, that. Right. Everyone knows. And you know it too. You know it too. And just – and every conspiracy theory that came out of Trump's mouth was coming out of her mouth. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, we have this very nice liberal who doesn't want to argue, but you have to understand, I'm just Republican facts. You know, I'm an independent, really. I'm an independent. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. Like, no, you have to tell this bitch, you're out of my family now.
Yeah.
You're gone. We're no more Thanksgiving. We're cutting you off. We don't talk you until you recover from being a fucking racist lunatic. We're not going to have any more conversations at all. Fuck you. You're off my Facebook page. But no, it's like, can we just find a way to accommodate these crazy people? Can't we just find a way to hug it out? And no, you can't, because this is who they will always be. And no matter what you do, no matter how much of the field you cede to them, no matter how much you say, well, you know, I'm sure we can find a place in the middle to agree, they're going to take everything you give to them and still come after you for being a socialist, communist, liberal monster.
Let's be clear, too, that that kind of accommodationist rhetoric, the people who see through that most instantly are young voters.
Yes, they do.
The people you need in this district, if you're going to win as a Democrat, are college students.
Yes.
This district is gerrymandered as fuck. I'm telling you. It runs from Champaign-Urbana all the way down to St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And it was designed to include as many college campuses as possible in order to make it possible for a Democrat to win. But you cannot win unless you get college students to vote. And Illinois does a very good job with a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature of mail-in ballots with no excuse. You can vote, and that doesn't get college students off their ass to vote. It doesn't. They're busy with other things. And so if you want to make them activists, if you want to get them awake, saying things like, well, we're independent, we're going to work both sides of the aisle when homophobia is on the ballot,
right?
When racism is on the ballot, and this is something that I see constantly on our daughter's social media streams.
Mm-hmm.
We will not agree to disagree on racism. We will not agree to disagree on homophobia and transphobia, because my gay friends and my trans friends and my black friends, I will not tolerate you discriminating against them. We are done. And that absolutism, because, you know, young people believe in a black and white world where you're either with us or not.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to try to get along at the Thanksgiving table, but they're done already at 18. They're done because they've seen the hate. And we need to see that, too. If you don't run that race along the lines of, and yes, you're going to have Republicans vote against you if you stand up for trans people.
Yes, you will.
They're going to fucking vote against you anyway.
Right. Right.
So move on. And you know, Rachel Bitticoffer, I know she is volunteering for the Lincoln Project.
Hey, she gets, as long as she gets a paycheck.
She doesn't. She's a volunteer. She's not paid by them.
As long as she gets support.
Yep.
I don't care where she gets it, because the Lincoln Project is a gelding anyway. It's completely impotent anyway. So go for it, Rachel.
You know? She's absolutely right about this is about getting our voters jacked up to vote.
Right.
It's not about convincing middle of the road people to switch over to your side. They're not going to do it.
And that's what was so striking about it, because this is a replication of a constant community attitude that we have here in Trump country, even though it's a red, blue state generally. We're in the purple red portion of it, where on the one side, liberals are very quiet and want to accommodate, and everybody should be in church together, and we shouldn't argue politics. Let's not talk about politics, even though fascism leaks into everything. Mm-hmm. There's no way to avoid it when the president of the United States is a psychopath who's trying to kill you. And lies and demonizes you, and all of your Republican friends go, yeah, that's my fucking guy. There's no way to stop talking about politics when they insist on ramming it into everything. The politics we should be talking about are, what's the best healthcare system? What's the proper tax rate? Not Democrats are lying, cheating scumbags who need to be wiped from the earth. And that is
and Rachel Bitticoffer's point is, talking about policy doesn't move votes.
No.
It doesn't move voters.
It doesn't.
And we all want to do that. Those of us that have our heads on, you know, cable news all day long and know how many votes it takes to pass a bill, we don't matter in that respect. Politics means getting down in the dirt and fighting. And fighting based on the morality of your side and the immorality of the other side.
Yeah.
And we have an easy job to do there.
Yes, it's not hard.
It's not hard, but
winning.
You got to do it. And if you're just saying, well, my friend's on the other side, and by the way, the problem is really both sides in Washington, you're not going to get there.
You've already lost. There's a long piece here that I'm not going to read by the local Trump bundler and Mike Pence's advance man, who lives like 3 miles from here. And he is chastising his quote-unquote never-Trump friends for being sullen losers, and how the Donald Trump was on track to be the greatest president ever, and he gave you everything you wanted, taxes and oil and judges.
Yeah, he talked about how, and this is true, Donald Trump delivered for conservatism.
He did.
Yeah.
He would have been at 7-2 Supreme Court if 2 or 3% of you wouldn't be so obstinate.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have coasted to an easy win. So the fantasy that there is some neutral ground on which you can build a third party or a different Republican Party is insane. There's not. The bad people, all 70 million of them, are in one party now, and everyone else is elsewhere. Never Trumpers are still waiting for their close-up, Mr. DeMille. MSNBC is still committed to making Michael Steele and the Lincoln Project the real heroes here.
Especially Brian Williams.
Brian Williams just said, you know, you guys deserve a parade. You know, just the awesome work you did. And it reminded me of an essay that Harlan Ellison wrote about being in Brazil during the space, during the moon launch.
Uh-huh.
And watching Brazilians on television and Brazilian scientists taking credit for the moon launch, for the moon landing, and explaining the moon is a very long way away. Yes, it's a very long way away. It was very difficult to get there, but together with the United States, we made it there. Like, no, you had nothing to do with this. You didn't do any fucking thing at all. And that was harmless. But in this case, as Brother Charles Pierce wrote, the Lincoln Project didn't move 10 fucking votes in this country. They didn't do anything. Their track record is zero.
And with Trump on a pace to win nearly 7 million more votes than he got in 2016, other than money raised from credulous liberals who were entertained by their product.
Sure.
You got to admit that.
Yeah.
There is no metric by which the Lincoln Project could be considered a success. They didn't flip Susan Collins' seat or Lindsey Graham's. Mm-hmm. And apparently, although I haven't heard otherwise, except from Michael Steele, I don't know what their project is for flipping the Senate in 2022. I haven't heard that since. And I did hear Michael Steele say that his project was to turn the Republican Party into a governing force again.
A governing majority. He has a plan to reclaim the Republican Party and turn it into a governing majority, which I wouldn't know about, except I saw it on my liberal TV.
On my liberal TV, yes.
So let's consider why they failed. Because you're right, their ads were charming and entertaining, and everyone loves porn, and it was liberal porn. But that's all it was. It was liberal porn. So let's just consider one fact. One of Rick Wilson, let's be very specific, most infamous ads was the filth he ran morph the face of a paraplegic veteran named Max Cleland into Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. Infamous, horrible, shitty, awful, rat-fucking thing to do, which is what Rick Wilson's good at. That's history, and he's never apologized for it. He never backs off for it. You know, he's a mercenary, and that's what was needed. But consider, what was that ad designed to do? That ad was not designed to persuade independents of the tax policy of the Republican Party, or it was not designed to coax, you know, leaning Democrats into the GOP. It was designed to whip the Republican base into a frenzy and point them at the polls. That's exactly – because that's all that Rick Wilson knows how to do. So the problem is liberals didn't need to be brought to a boil. Liberals
not
have been
this
on
time.
A, no, nope. No. 2018, remember, we flipped the House before the Lincoln Project even came into existence.
Right.
There was no Lincoln Project when we won 40 House votes, because the liberals have been on a full fucking boil since the day after Donald Trump won the election.
And particularly women.
Particularly women. The Women's March, which at the time you might recall David Brooks dismissed as frivolous and silly, that was the thing, that was the force, that was the political energy that took the House of Representatives away from these lunatics. The Lincoln Project had nothing to do with that. And again, their batting record this election is zero. So what they're really good at is getting liberals to give them money for doing ads that make liberals wet in the bikini area. Mm-hmm. And that's all they're doing. And that would be a joke if it weren't for the fact that they have at least two cable networks who will give them unlimited free time to brag about what a great job they're doing. And that's what really bothers me. Now they're going to bring their magic to the Ossoff campaign. So sorry, John, it was a good while you had
it. Oh, don't say that. We're going to do postcards to voters. We're going to do everything we can to get Ossoff and Reverend Warnock into the Senate. It's crucial that we fight like hell for that.
So like my wife said, Trump won with 7 million more votes than he had last time. Mm-hmm. They did not knock a single Republican, as far as I can tell, off of the fence, because there is no fence. And all they did, if they did anything, they went on television, called the people that used to put roofs over their head and food in their mouth. They called them credulous, toothless rubes and morons, which I can't believe actually moved them to change their position. I believe it moved them to dig in harder and get friends to vote, because that fucker on television just called us all a bunch of fucking morons and traitors, and we'll show him. So, you know, way to go, guys. But you got enough money in the bank now to start your own media company. So I guess congratulations. Good for you.
The audience that the Lincoln Project was speaking to largely was a white audience.
Yes.
The people that won elections were black people.
Yes.
Black voters won the elections that we won. And we'd better start remembering that and acknowledging it and using that knowledge to our advantage. And someone who used that knowledge to his advantage and understands that the Democrats do not win without the Obama coalition is Joe Biden.
Yes.
So thank you, Joe Biden, for recognizing that and not playing it safe and not playing it with somebody you got along with on the campaign trail in the primaries, but setting aside things and working to get the black vote out.
Yes. Well, and in that.
And rebuilding the Obama coalition, because that's what's going to win elections.
As you might have noted in the headline just yesterday, or was it today, Democrats just elected the first African-American woman to the office of vice president.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah! Which is
the
first
Asian-American, the first HBCU graduate, the first woman vice president. Mm-hmm. What an awesome thing.
This is a great day. This is an amazing day. I mean, again, we deposed a dictator, and we made history with some people that
A woman of color. Mm-hmm. In the office of vice president.
And you know what? We'll
That's
argue
just an
about,
amazing thing.
We'll argue about Medicare for All some other day. Not today.
Yeah, not today. Today, we pop the cork.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the fence, on Fox News, Newt Gingrich advised Donald Trump to deal with losing by having Bill Barr arrest election workers in Pennsylvania and then have the state legislature throw out the results of the election. Because, you know, Newt Gingrich, friend of democracy.
Why would you not, when you want your wife to stay as your blowjob queen wife, number three, hat tip 10 grain, wife to remain as ambassador to the Vatican.
Yeah, that's a hell of a job.
And so now we have the meme of Biden has no mandate. Mm-hmm. This is the new meme from the right.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the center.
Biden must
give
Mitch McConnell everything he wants.
That's this only sensible thing to do is to give Republicans what they asked for, because he has no real mandate to govern.
So, and examples of that include the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, Joe Biden's non-mandate, because progressive ideas lost people. You know, that's what the Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal, wants you to believe.
Yeah, that was the editorial board's headline. Joe Biden doesn't have a mandate, and our party and our progressive ideas have lost.
He won by over 3 million votes. He has a mandate. Any Republican who won by that margin has a mandate. Joe Biden has a mandate. Greta Van Susteren, I don't know what the final vote count will be, but neither presidential candidate can claim a mandate with the closeness of the race. And the winner needs to govern all, which means moderation. No far left, no far right. Thoughts? My thoughts are you don't want your taxes increased, Greta. Yeah.
My thoughts are you had a sweet gig at MSNBC, but you couldn't keep your mouth shut. So off to the woodpile with you, off to the ash heap of history with you. Rick Santorum, who is for no understandable actually, this isn't true. Rick Santorum is on CNN all the time as the Republican because there is no one else less awful than he, than the Republican
That's
Party
it.
That can put up.
That's it. He will speak in sound bites.
Right. He as shitty and awful and lying and a sack of shit as Rick Santorum is.
He shows up on time in makeup on set, and he speaks in sound bites. He's a Republican.
He's the best they've got. And he was on CNN literally saying Democrats need to give Republicans, including Trump, time and space to work through their feelings about losing. You know what? I have feelings about you losing, and I'm not being given any time to process them, but I'm going to.
I have feelings about democracy and accepting the results of a vote count, which you are equating with processing feelings. Destroying democracy is not processing feelings, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Friedman. Oh, God.
Yeah. Tom Friedman still exists for some reason and still has a job in the New York Times because the New York Times can't ever fire Friedman or Brooks or any of those other.
And he said on CNN that the best case scenario, he means, again, for his taxes.
Right.
Is Biden winning and Republicans holding the Senate, so both will be forced to compromise.
Because Tom Friedman hit his head and slept through the entire Obama administration.
He was passed out through the entire Obama administration.
Joe Scarborough, who has a show on MSNBC, don't know if you know this blue gal, is already saying that we can't look to the past in defense of Mitch McConnell. Don't look at the past. Don't look at the past. The past is gone now. The past has disappeared. That's where all the bodies are buried.
The past where he traded having nonstop monthly phone-ins with Donald Trump in exchange for keeping his relationship with Meek a secret.
Shh, shh. See, this is why we're never going to have a gig on this is why Quibi's
MSNBC.
Our best bet.
Right.
Our Quibi's our best bet. We're going strong with Quibi.
One more.
After you, darling.
Lindsey Graham. If we keep the Senate, and I think we will, I become budget chairman. I'd like to create a dialogue about how we can finally begin to address the debt.
Yes. Remember, and you're not going to hear it at first, but you'll hear constantly. All of the established people whose combined incompetence and recklessness and criminality and greed, I'm talking about the mainstream media and the Republican Party and all of that shipwreck trash bag of the establishment have for 4 years been bent like memory plastic into saying grudgingly against their will, Donald Trump is a liar. He lies. Mm-hmm, the minute he's gone, they're going to snap back into position. Everyone's going to agree to forget the past. Donald Trump was an anomaly. He was a black swan. Republicans will be forgiven. And we're let's get serious
burn the
about
lifeboats,
this.
Folks.
And as best you can, burn the lifeboats. And I think we have to do several podcasts, maybe special editions on.
Well, that's what we're talking about. There are 10 Fridays between now and Inauguration Day. Yeah. And our plan is to do a kind of liberal politics university and talk about in 10 weeks. We're going to come up with a plan for the next 10 weeks to talk about how you prevent Republican rebranding in the media.
Yes.
And we think we've got enough material to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Think
and
so.
We'll have current examples every week. Driftglass. We have missed a few things, and we're running out of time. So tell me what you want to talk about for the next 2 minutes.
I think it's important to mention that the U.S. recorded at least 121,000 new corona cases this week.
Yeah. We are still in the middle of a pandemic. And, you know, Trump's talking about firing Fauci. Mm-hmm. Steve Bannon's talking about beheading Fauci and got banned from Twitter as a result.
Yes, he did. The U.S. Has formally exited the Paris Climate Change Agreement, which I assume a President Biden would put us back into.
You mean he's going to have an apology tour, Driftglass? Is that what you mean?
That's exactly. He's going to go bow to foreign dictators. And and suddenly Sean Hannity will get his second wind and Fox News will have someone to hate again because they don't know how to do.
Again, I think we're going to have enough to talk about in the next 10 weeks about how to prevent this. I will tell you that I've said this before, but I have a tracker that tracks mentions of Trumpism in the media.
Yeah.
And this week it went from an average of about 30 mentions per day. On Wednesday, it was 806 mentions.
Yeah. Yep.
Because they can't say Republican.
Nope.
And the deal with this election, the deal with the results of this election, I'll end with this, is that the Republican Party is full of Republicans, as my husband says.
Yes, it is.
It's not Trumpism. Trump is someone who has banked on what the Republican Party is and added his brand to that building. He's plastered his name on that building like he does, and that makes it his. But the building itself, rotten to the core, has always been full of Republicans.
Well said, Blue Gal.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty, however, is a very special dog named Nina. Nina went this Halloween dressed as an official, and I mean official, USPS postal carrier.
Oh, God.
The costume was from the United States Postal Service, and you need to go see Nina in her. She's so proud of her postal carrier costume. Woof, woof, Nina. We love you.
Neither rain nor sleet nor squirrels nor rabbits nor
stinky smells.
Fire hydrants nor other dogs that look kind of sexy, and you know what time of the year it is.
We love you, Nina. And whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, Nina knows that your pet will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Nina eats freshly poured dog food.
Yeah.
Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. You can visit Postal Carrier Nina at our Facebook page and website. And you can send your Internet Kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us whatever's on your mind. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise, #SaveThePostOffice. And we think the post office will be saved both by President Biden and also by the federal judge, who's quite perturbed still about Mr. DeJoy pretty much ignoring the order of the federal judge. Yes.
Yeah, I think if you feed Mr. DeJoy through a high-speed sorting machine a few times, Maybe that's a good example to other people if they shouldn't do that.
Yeah, certainly his career should be put through a high-speed sorting machine forever. Mm-hmm. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job, folks. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. We have Patreon, PayPal, and a postal address information. It's all there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, based on Nate Silver's polling data and reading old David Brooks columns, the Internet Kitties are just about ready to call this election for Marco Rubio.
It's going to be Rubio.
It's going to be
Rubio.
It's
going to be Rubio.
And I also want to thank Nicole Sanders for having me on her show this week.
Yeah.
She invited me on to share my thoughts about cats and kittens and knitting and all kinds of stuff.
No, that wasn't
eventually
it.
Meandered around the subject of politics and whatnot.
She was not interested in your opinion on knitting.
Well, apparently Tom Hartman bailed, so they needed someone who...
Tom Hartman might be a little busy this week. So
You know what? I am that warm body. You can plug into pretty much anything for 30 minutes. And go, go, go.
Wind him up. He'll talk for 30 minutes on politics. Absolutely. Hey, everybody. We love you.
Love you guys.
Hang in there. We'll see you next week.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.